Well, for our culture segment, I was out of the office, and so I asked Catherine to step in and interview our great friend, Deborah Falada. She is the founder of True Love Dates and also has a book by the same name and just is a counselor, psychologist, has a lot of great expertise on relationships. And so she's going to be talking to Catherine about interdependence versus independence. Let's take a listen.
Deborah, I'm so excited to talk to you. Thank you for coming back to Boundless.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good. So you have this topic in your book, Choosing Marriage, which we've talked to you about before, but I think we need to come back to this one because we hear about it from listeners all the time. And the idea is, how do you learn to be independent while you're single and then kind of morph that independence as you're dating, engaged, married? And I realized recently that I think I'm really struggling with being too independent. Yeah. I'm about to get married, and I was at an engagement party recently, and they brought out this cake, this beautiful like chocolate cake with sprinkles. And they were like, hey, you guys should practice cutting the cake. So yeah. I was like, oh yeah, great idea. So my fiance, Cody, kind of steps up in front of me, and he starts cutting it, and I like didn't like the way he was cutting it. I was like, no, too big of a piece. I'm not helping. So I was like, hey, let me step in the front, and like I'll help you with this. So I step to the front. I'm like holding the little cake cutter, and I start cutting it, and he's not really helping. He's kind of standing behind me, and I pull it out, and I like drop this giant piece of cake on the table.
Oh, no.
And like everyone in the party was like,
So maybe cake cutting isn't your gifting.
Yeah, it was so awkward. And I sat there and I was like looking at the ruined cake and I was like, I think I need to learn to trust more and be less independent.
Yeah.
But it sounds like when you got married, you kind of struggled with being too independent too, right? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think when you're single, you are so trained to be independent in so many ways. And you assume that your way is the best because it's what's worked for you. You know, it's part of your personality or the way you grew up. So things that are part of your personality, such as for me, I'm such a go, go, go kind of person. You know, I'm type A, I'm efficient. I don't like to waste time. I love lists. And then my husband is the complete opposite of that. He is so laid back and he likes to have time for relaxation. And, you know, like we were such different people. In fact, when we did premarital counseling, I'll never forget, the counselor looked at us and he's like, Deborah, you're the gas, but John's the brakes.
But we need both.
When you think about it, you need both. And I think that's the key when it comes to understanding independence versus what I call in Choosing Marriage interdependence, is understanding your strengths, understanding your weaknesses, and how the other person's life fits into those as well. And you really learn from each other along the way. So let me give you hope in that this isn't like something you learn overnight. You know, becoming interdependent is a process. It is a process of learning who's got strengths in what area and how can we become more like each other along the way.
Okay. Yeah. You talk about that there's actually a lie of independence that a lot of people believe. I thought it was funny because I was at Bible study recently and we went around the circle talking about our biggest struggles and everyone said they struggle with admitting that they need something. It was all women.
Yeah.
Why is that so hard for us? Why is it so hard to admit that we need help?
You know, I think as women, we see it as weakness to need something. And I think culture tells us it is weakness to need something, to need emotional care, to need someone to give you a good pep talk, to need affirmation, to need help fixing something in the house. Like I got an email from a girl that was like, I just struggle asking for help as a single woman because I don't want to show that I need something. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. There's a humility that comes with understanding our weaknesses and our strengths and understanding, okay, I do have strength in this area, but I am not strong in every single area. And healthy people understand the need for community and God made us that way. So this is beyond a male-female thing. It's not like I'm this poor female that needs the help of a stronger male. That's not how we want to see relationships. We want to see relationships as God helps us to see community. We all have strengths as the body of Christ. And we need to help each other and learn from each other and strengthen each other. And if we can kind of start viewing ourselves through that perspective, I think it would be a lot easier to ask for help, you know? But like I said, culture makes it like, oh, you're so weak if you need help, rather than seeing it as this beautiful picture of all the different strengths that God has placed within the community of Christ.
Yeah, and you had to learn that with John a lot with spiritual gifts, right? Can you tell me about that?
You know, in Christian culture, a lot of times we are taught that men look a certain way and women look a certain way when it comes to spiritual giftings. And if you look at my husband and I, we're very different when it comes to spiritual giftings. I am the one that teaches and talks and travels. His spiritual giftings are in his patience, his kindness, his faith, his prayer life. And you can look at one or the other and think, well, he should be more like this or she should be more like this. But really what it came down to for us is understanding the strengths each one of us possesses. And in the beginning of our marriage, it was a little bit of a struggle for me because I was wired to believe that spiritual giftings look like this in a man and spiritual giftings look like this in a woman. But really, that was just my preconceived notions that I had come into, the things that were taught to me that weren't necessarily true. And so learning to recognize his giftings and learning to recognize my giftings and learning to see how God wanted to interweave those things together has been a process. And it's been such a beautiful process for each of us.
Good. How do you embrace who you are, though, your spiritual gifts, and then also appreciate who the other person is? Because, I mean, I've heard it compared to like when you get married, it's like two cultures colliding and you're like totally different and you don't really understand where the other person's coming from a lot. How do you kind of step back and be like, hey, where I come from is valid and my feelings are valid and my spiritual gifting is valid and this, what I'm hearing from God is probably valid, but you have this whole other perspective.
Yeah.
How do you balance that?
Again, it's a process, but I really think, number one, knowing yourself. Some people don't know themselves at all. They couldn't tell you. If I said, list your top three personality traits, list your top three spiritual strengths, most people would be like, I haven't actually thought about that. So first it starts with knowing who you are and how God has wired you in your personality, but in your spiritual life as well. And then knowing who this person is that you're marrying, this person that you're in a relationship with, this person that you're dating, understanding them, understanding the dynamic of how God has made them. Because if you don't understand it, you're not going to be able to appreciate it. You're not going to be able to learn how to blend together. I kind of see relationships like as two different colors. Let's say I'm red and my husband's blue. We're both going to remain red and blue when we become one. But when you put two colors together, it turns into a different color. It turns into a purple. And purple requires a little red and requires a little blue. So there's that part of embracing who you are, but then not staying the same. I really believe that in the healthiest relationships, we don't stay the same. We grow. We sharpen each other. We learn from each other. We become like the other person. And I really believe that that's part of the process of becoming one. And I talk about how, you know, John was so laid back. I was so type A. I have learned that my personality was not the best personality to have.
That's so hard.
There's weaknesses in being a go, 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 go type. Like I realized by marrying him, I had no room for rest in my life. I had no room to breathe. I was anxious because I didn't understand the personality that comes with peace. And he's learned from me and I've learned from him. And we've kind of created this new norm, this new color. And I really believe that's kind of the picture of what marriage should look like.
That's beautiful. But I feel like, I don't know what stage of your life you got married, but I feel like I was just starting to realize like, you know, I like the way I am. And then I'm realizing that it's not great all the time and I need to work on it. Yeah.
It's a constant process of the Lord helping you embrace how he has made you, but at the same time, showing you the things that aren't the way he has made you. Like, there's a lot of things in us that's actually the result of sin, not the result of our personality. And sometimes our personality leads us into sin. Someone who's really type A can struggle with worry, you know, constant worry, constant anxiety.
Yeah, perfectionism. Yeah.
That doesn't mean God made me that way. So it's like, how can I take this personality that God has given me and refine it? And through the process of relationships, it gets refined, not just through marriage. If you're out there and you're listening and you're single, God refines you through the body of Christ before he refines you through marriage. You know, think about those friendships and those people in your life that are different than you, your family members, your pastors, your roommates. God refines you in those relationships just as much as he does in the context of marriage. And that's an important thing to remember.
Yeah. And we're so thankful for that. Okay, let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum from that fierce independence to codependence.
Yeah.
And you kind of said you actually see this in more Christian relationships than non-Christian, right?
I do.
That's crazy to me.
I do.
So what does codependence mean?
You know, I was at a Christian college recently, And this young girl came up to me and she was just talking to me about what I had just talked about with dating. And one thing that she mentioned was, I cannot wait, she said, until I find the person who's going to complete me. Like, that is just my goal right now in my life.
But it sounds so romantic.
Doesn't it? It does sound romantic. But I'll tell you what, that mentality can really be damaging to relationships. And we think that this person is going to complete us. This person is going to add so much to our life. But we don't realize that that's not actually the goal of marriage. And when we go into marriage expecting someone else to make us feel good, to fill us up, then we spend the entirety of our lives relying on that person to do something that God never intended for them to do. Mm. Their job is not to fill us up. Their job is not to give us security or purpose or meaning. So many of those things we need to deal with on our own. And I always tell people the best relationships are when two people feel complete, not when two people go into a relationship feeling half full and desperately trying to use the other person to fill each other up. That's what codependency is birthed out of, a desperate need to feel full using somebody else. Hmm. But that's not what God meant for relationships. I think the ideal relationship is two people who are both full and overflowing into each other's lives. And that's the beauty of a healthy relationship rooted in Christ, because Christ promises that all fullness is in him. He can fill us up to overflowing. And I think that's a really important imagery to keep in mind as we're pursuing healthy relationships.
Yeah. You tell a story in your book about a girl you counseled who got married, and you kind of say she wasn't emotionally, spiritually, psychologically in any way ready for marriage. And I think you pegged the fear of all of our listeners that someday we will enter relationship and not be emotionally, spiritually, psychologically ready. And that's my theory why less people are getting married a lot of times in the Christian community, is we're so worried of that being us. So what are signs that that's us? What are signs that we are not emotionally, spiritually, psychologically ready, or that someone else maybe that we're interested in is not?
Well, let me just infuse some hope here. You're never going to be completely ready.
Whew,
in the fact
really
that you're never going to be perfect, right? You're always going to have work that needs to be done. But the problem is so many people haven't even started the work. They go into marriage assuming the work's going to happen later. But we need to stop seeing singleness as just a time of waiting. Singleness isn't just a time to sit around, twiddle our thumbs, waiting for the next thing. That's how we present it a lot of times in Christian culture. It's just a time of waiting. I'm in a season of waiting. No, you're not. You are in a season of living. You're in a season of preparation. You're in a season of becoming healthy and whole along the way. And so what is God doing in your life right now? Are you even asking those questions? Have you dealt with your past and your past baggage and your family of origin and your identity and who you believe you are? Do you know what God's calling is on your life? Do you have a vision for where God is taking you, whether or not there's somebody there walking by your side? Do you have a vision for your future? Dealing with our past, understanding our identity today, and having a vision for our future are some steps that we can take to becoming a healthy person. Because this time of singleness isn't just a time to sit around and wait. It's a time of preparation, and maybe not preparation for marriage, because let's be realistic. Not every single person on the face of this earth will get married. Statistically, the majority of singles will get married. But we can't see it as a time of preparation for marriage, because that's not guaranteed. But it's a time of preparation for whatever God has called us into next. And preparing and becoming healthy is never going to be in vain.
And I think that gives you hope when you think of it as preparing instead of just a drudgery of life.
I think so too.
Hey, this is preparing me for something, even if you have no idea what it is.
Whatever it is, it's something good, because God is orchestrating. He is preparing you for something. And there's something really empowering about that.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to ask you, because one thing I love about your book is that you make your husband just sound like this amazing guy, and it's just like so inspiring.
Is it true? I think in my first book, I make him seem amazing. I think in the second book, I'm like, okay, let me give you a little more of a picture of who we really are.
Well, he's listening, so I guess you like still have to be careful. But one thing is, you talk about your triangle theory, which I want to come to a little bit later, but you say you are sure of one thing, that your husband loves someone more than he loves you, that he loves God more than he loves you.
Yeah.
So did you see that when you were dating? Did you notice something in him that was different? Or is that something that maybe he's developed or you've appreciated more than now that you're married? Because I just hear the chorus of single women reading that and they're like, where is my John?
I know. Where is that godly Christian man who
loves
the
Jesus
Lord
more than me? Right.
But you know what? I think it's a lie from the enemy that those men don't exist. I hear it too. I hear it too. Working in the ministry of singles at truelovedates.com, I hear it all the time. But I'm having a hard time believing it because I travel from town to town to town, speaking at churches and conferences and colleges. I meet so many people who love Jesus. And I believe that sometimes we look around and it looks discouraging. I think the enemy wants us to feel discouraged. He wants us to think, you're the only one out here that loves Jesus. You might as well settle. You might as well date that guy. Who cares if he doesn't love the Lord? Forget it. You're not going to really find someone who loves God. I really believe that the enemy is trying to like put this smoke screen and make us believe that we don't all exist. We're not all here. We're in this dark room. And maybe there's singles all over this dark room that love Jesus. We just can't see them. So go ahead and believe they don't exist. Because when you believe they don't exist, you will start making poor choices. And that's when you start living out of your desperation. So I'm going to go ahead and say, I am calling that out to be a lie. And I really believe that we trust God in this process. I can't control what this guy is going to be like or act like, but I can control who I am and how I'm growing towards Jesus. And I can continue to trust that as I walk towards him, he's going to help me meet somebody that is also walking towards him. So throw down that lie and continue trusting the Lord. And I also say, Get involved in things that you love. Get involved in churches. A lot of singles are saying that, but let's be honest, we are not very proactive with our love life. When it comes to getting a job, we put out resumes and we are doing the hard work of trying to apply to schools and trying to apply here and there. When it comes to dating, we kind of take a passive approach.
Yeah, we're like,
God's
going to
bring
app.
Me the right guy when the right timing comes.
Right.
But that's not how dating works. And dating is more important. You know, your love life, your future marriage is more important than so many other aspects of life. So put as much work into it. Take responsibility over it. Put yourself in places. Meet Christian singles. Get involved in community. If you live in a town that doesn't have something, you start it yourself. Like, don't wait around. Live, prepare, you know, take responsibility and move towards the direction of healthy relationships. And just like anything else, you put in the work that you can and you trust God with what you can't do.
Yeah, that's powerful. Going back to what you were saying about how, you know, so many women just have this idea that there are no good guys. I think it also makes when you get into the relationship with the good guy, or this has been my experience, you feel kind of bad and you feel guilty for your single friends because you're like, I want you to find this, but you're not finding it. And I've had friends tell me, because I, for a long time, I didn't post anything about my relationship. You know, I was so excited. I got engaged. I didn't post much about it at all until I was having dinner with a friend. And she was like, Catherine, I keep going back and looking at the picture you posted when you got engaged. And it was like the only picture I'd posted. And I was like, oh, really, really sorry. And she was like, no, it gives me hope.
Yeah.
Like you found. Yeah. And so now, I mean, in a nice way, I'm trying to not brag.
No, totally.
But like, hey, I found this guy. And so I think if you're listening.
Because wasn't there a time in your life that you thought they don't exist?
Oh, absolutely.
And today, here you are moving towards marriage.
Right.
And so thank God you didn't believe that lie, you know?
Well, I almost did. And so, but anyway, I just think if you're listening and you finally found a good guy, don't be afraid to talk about it because it's not, I mean, and people are responsible for their response to
their
your relationship.
Response,
but anyway,
yeah.
I think it gives some hope. Okay, let's end by talking about this triangle theory. And you and John had to learn this in your marriage kind of the hard way, right?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Just because you date and marry someone who loves Jesus doesn't mean that you're going to consistently love Jesus. It's definitely a trajectory. It shows you kind of where this person is heading. But we're all going to face hardships. We're all going to face dark times. And choosing marriage, I talk about a time where we really struggled. I mean, he was in residency working like over 100 hours a week. I was at home with two babies and trying to write my first book and navigating this ministry. So
did you have postpartum depression at the same time too?
Yes. And dealing with postpartum depression. So just think about the amount of stress. And when you're depressed, like you can't see 10 feet in front of you. It's like, what's the next step? Like you just struggling so much. And maybe sometime we'll talk about depression because that's a really important topic. But I'm under stress. He's under stress. We're not connecting with each other and we're not connecting with God because you know what? Sometimes stress causes you to do one of two things. For some people, it pushes them towards Jesus. For others, it's like, I'm putting him on the back burner for now. during that season of our life, I think we were both putting him on the back burner, you know. And sometimes as a Christian, you forget that going to Jesus is a daily thing. I need to be daily filled. He's not going to just fill me once and for all. It's a daily process of getting filled and sitting under his living waters every single day. So we're going through this hard season that just comes to a head eventually. And, you know, I just will never forget this night of tears and crying and confessing and just realizing, like, we need a reset. And that reset starts with each one of us fixing our compass back to Jesus. And when you do that, so many other things need to change too, and how you're doing so many other things in your life. And so it was like one thing after another that we would talk through that needed to change. And I talk about the triangle theory because if you imagine a triangle and God is at the top of that triangle and each one of you is at the base, whether you're married or whether you're not married and you're thinking of this future person that you hope to marry that you don't even know, the closer you move towards the top of that triangle, which is God, and the closer the other person, your spouse or your future spouse, moves towards God in a triangle, the closer you move towards the top, the distance between you decreases and you become closer to one another as well. Wow. And I really think that applies to dating, but it also applies to marriage. It applies to every stage of our life.
Well, friendships too,
friendships,
I think.
Friendships, every relationship,
yeah.
You know?
That's awesome.
Jesus holds you together in so many ways.
That's awesome. Deborah, thank you so much. I feel like so many people who talk about marriage either make it look too easy or just like so hard that I'm like, I'm so stressed. But I think you have that perfect balance of like, hey, you know, here's realistically what happens and what you need to know. And I think you've given us all something that we can work on today.
Thank you so much. And I just want everyone to remember, the more you know, the better you're going to do. So all the stuff that you're learning and downloading, all these resources are just helping you become better so that you can do relationships better as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's good. They should listen to Boundless more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, I really enjoyed listening to that, and I hope you did too. And it's just a great reminder of how, you know, it's easy when you're single to just be independent and all about, like, I can conquer this myself. But certainly in dating and moving towards marriage, we need to stress interdependence. And even as single people, I think we need to learn to rely on one another a little bit more, because it's not just about marriage. It's just about being a Christian and relating to others. So that book, Deborah's book, Choosing Marriage, Why It Has to Start with We Is Greater Than Me, is available from Boundless this week. In fact, for a gift of any amount, we want to make this book available to you. And so go to boundless.org and you will see the book listed there. Just click on it, give a gift, a donation to Boundless, and we will get this book in your hands. And hopefully it will be helpful to you.